It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Now it's time for another Guy Benson Show, Benson Bite, where we bring you the day's most interesting interviews in a bite-sized package. For the full episode, visit GuyBensonShow.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, joining us from New York, our headquarters, is our friend Molly Hemingway, editor-in-chief at The Federalist, Fox News contributor, best-selling author, MZ Hemingway on social. Great to talk to you, Molly. Great job earlier on Outnumbered.
Thank you. It's always fun to be here.
I want to open with a bit of a sensitive question, maybe prying a little bit into areas where I shouldn't, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because there's some of this going around, and I'm sorry if this is insensitive. Are you aware of any members of your family who have been eaten by cannibals?
You know, it's something you shouldn't joke about. It's something to take very seriously. And no, of course not. I could not. I really got a kick out of Peter asking the question about it on Friday and the response from the White House. But, you know, the story is dramatic enough as it was. President Biden was trying to talk about an uncle who had died in military service. That's a dramatic enough story,
right,
even if it didn't involve cannibals and getting shot down by them.
Yeah, that didn't happen. So, and, you know, we had Kat Timfier on Friday, and I made the point. And I'll make it again, just because I kept thinking about it over the weekend, and I'm not sure why it bothers me as much as it does. And I know that people who hate Trump will say, well, there's all sorts of other things that you might dwell on about Trump. All right, fine. With Joe Biden, it's not just the constant fabrications about himself, about his life, about his family. It seems like some of the most brazen lies and fairy tales that he tells about himself and his family involve the deaths of his family members, whether it's his first wife and daughter, which was, again, horrible unto itself. No need to embellish the sadness, but he accused the other driver in that crash for years, falsely, of being a drunk driver. And the family begged him to stop telling that lie. Then, of course, the many times he's distorted the circumstances about Beau's death, his son. Again, really sad, young man dying of cancer, but it had to be in Iraq, it had to be in war, and all these other things that weren't true. And now here's Uncle Bozy serving his country, going down and drowning in the South Pacific. Dramatic story. No, there had to be now cannibals consuming his flesh, which is why he was never found or whatever. There's something beyond just a screw loose there, I think. There's something pretty disturbing.
Well, I actually wonder if it isn't just, though, that he does tend to lie about everything. And I know politicians lie. It's kind of what they do. But I think about all the other things he has lied about, including his personal history. I mean, the number of churches and religious institutions he claims to have been brought up in are, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like 40 at this point. And these dramatic stories from childhood, he seems to have a bit of an inferiority complex in that he frequently tells stories that make himself out to be more important than he was, or smarter than he was, or better performing than he was. So I think the death-related stories are part of that. But I do have to say, of all the death stories, there is something really sick about how he tries to make his son's death, which was awful, related to war when it wasn't related to war. You know, he died from natural illness. And when he does that, when talking to people who did lose family members in war, it just is, it's inappropriate.
Yeah. And sometimes they've even commented on it, being like, well, we actually know how your son died, and we're very sorry about that, but that is not the same as this. There's this ingratiation compulsion. And after it happened, actually, I told a very dark joke to one of my friends, saying it's probably for the best that Biden doesn't meet with the family of Lake and Riley, because he'll try to say that Beau Biden was killed by an undocumented newcomer or something. Like, he just cannot help himself, it feels like. And again, this is not some sort of, you know, whataboutist comparison. It's like, oh, well, you know, Trump is a flawless adherent to truth. In my mind, he's definitely not. He's a serial liar himself. But we have an entire media cottage industry devoted to fact-checking every syllable that Donald Trump says. and to, in real time, put up graphics on TV saying that that is not true or without evidence, or they won't even play his speeches because it's too dangerous, because he might say some misinformation. And a lot of those very same gatekeepers, self-appointed gatekeepers, they do almost none of that when it comes to someone else who prevaricates and lies as a matter of course, like, you know, a fish in water, and that would be Joe Biden.
And it's not just that there's bad journalism in play there, you know, holding one side accountable. And by the way, obviously Donald Trump says tons of lies, but half the things that they claim are lies are not. Like, I remember the Washington Post had hundreds of instances where he said that he hadn't colluded with Russia. And was like, well, that was true. That's not a lie. But it also is just a violation of humor. I mean, we have one of the world's, history's greatest liars here. He had to leave his first run for president because of all the lies he told. He just like completely lifted a politician from a different country's life history and adopted it as his own until he was discovered.
It wasn't even just that he plagiarized Neil the Kinnock. Speech. Yeah, he plagiarized his life.
I mean, that's just comedic gold. And it's sad that we don't have a media or like comedy industry that takes advantage
like,
of it.
The cannibals thing.
It's amazing.
Setting aside like the genuine sadness that Uncle Bosie died the way that he did, not involving human flesh eaters, it is very funny that this doddering, no longer capable man is now just sort of, and he says, you know, he throws in the telltale true story or no joke, as he always does, while he is telling an absolutely untrue story about what happened to his uncle. And I noticed, I forget, it might have been Chuck Ross on Twitter who pointed out Joe Biden got very, very indignant and self-righteous when Donald Trump was calling COVID the China virus. He said that is just naked xenophobia and racism. Then a few years later, he's like, oh, by the way, those New Guinea savages ate my uncle. Like, there is a lot of humor there, and we have indulged some of it here. We've engaged in some of that humor. We enjoy it. In fact, I don't know, Justin, do we have our new drop that we have our new segment? Yes.
And now time for Grandpa's Stories.
Get ready, pal.
All right, so we have fun with it because how could you not? It's just right there. It's low-hanging fruit. It is admittedly quite amusing. But the people whose job it is to be funny and who have taken it upon themselves to be funny, quote-unquote, about our political process, strangely don't really have it in them to give Joe Biden the treatment that he so richly deserves, if not personally, just for the purposes of humor. I remember when Obama was president, the lame excuse was, oh, he's just too cool. He's too erudite. He's too personable. He's too smooth. It's so hard to make fun of someone that amazing, which is embarrassing and sycophantic. But even if you want to just take that at face value, this does not apply to Joe Biden, and yet the same sort of Praetorian guard of comedy, for the most part, they're at least trying to protect him the same way, at great expense of the laughter they could earn, which is like the whole point of their existence.
I do think it's not just the comedy writers, though. It's also the audience. I was reading something about this SNL writer who, out of the gate with Obama, you know, writes a skit that makes fun of him. And the audience, it just died with the audience. And so I think we kind of get the humor that we deserve. And life is better when you're willing to have people make fun of you and what you believe in. It's just a much more enjoyable existence. But for a lot of people on the left, I think they are like politics has taken over everything, including comedy. And so it's a bigger problem than just the comedy writers. It's also the audiences. Yeah. Although I think we're at a point where, you know, things are so cartoonishly bad with Biden and that administration that people are openly joking about it, even, you know, comedians and whatnot.
Yeah, I saw an SNL joke just recently where they were talking about a huge fundraising number for Joe Biden, talking about the cash on hand that he has. And then there was a brief pause. This is Weekend Update. And the punchline was, now, if he could only remember his ATM password, right? And that got like a very
so gentle
big laugh from the audience because, like, it's funny, and they put up a photo of him looking disoriented at the punchline. You can't help but laugh at least a little bit at it. And I'm sorry if you can't find it in your heart to very much appreciate the humor of Joe Biden lying about the cannibal story. You just have a heart of stone.
Yeah.
And it's too... Well, here we've spent like the first, what, half of our interview talking about it because it helps prove other points, but it also is just genuinely funny. Molly Hemingway, I want to get your analysis on the Trump trial, which is now underway today with opening statements. Stand by through this break. We'll be right back. It is The Guy Benson Show.
A fresh perspective on the topics of the day. It's Guy Benson.
Back here on The Guy Benson Show. Glad to have you along. Glad to have Molly Hemingway in our New York headquarters as well. Molly, the Trump trial in New York, this is the Alvin Bragg case, underway today, opening statements. I think a lot of anti-Trump Americans have been waiting for this big moment. I think a lot of other Americans view this as nakedly political. How do you see it?
Well, there are problems with each of the cases, but the New York cases in particular. You know, you might remember it was like a year ago when Alvin Bragg announced his indictment, and I think it was, I'm losing track of time, but when it happened, everyone just kind of said, this is a joke of a prosecution. I mean, it's not a crime. Also, the feds looked into it. It's still not a crime. And the larger context of, okay, so you can pay with private funds a private non-disclosure agreement, and that's a crime? Like, it just doesn't work for a lot of people, particularly when you think about what was happening in the 2016 election. You had Hillary Clinton pay a law firm, and the DNC pay a law firm to cook up the Russia collusion hoax through Fusion GPS. You know, that dossier that Donald Trump was preparing to steal the election by colluding right. with Russia. Nothing really happened to anyone involved. Nobody investigated. And then today, in these opening statements, you have Matthew Colangelo, who used to be Merrick Garland's number three at the Department of Justice. So if you're looking for a Biden connection, that's a pretty strong one. And there are other attorneys in Alvin Bragg's office who also have very strong ties to the Democrat Party or to the Mueller probe, other things. And so everyone just kind of sees this for what it is.
Well, and the Biden campaign, Molly, you'll recall, put out a press release on day one of the trial process with buzzwords like stormy and hush, like clearly winking at what was happening and kind of delighting in it and being gleeful about it. That was Biden's reelection campaign doing that.
Yeah, and I mean, it is clear, like the whole thing is a campaign operation. The idea is to use lawfare to go after your primary political opponents. It's not just Trump, but other prominent Republicans as well, to keep them off the campaign trail, to give them negative news coverage. And it's just been an onslaught up and down the Eastern Seaboard. But what's really weird about it, I think for a lot of people, is that it does not seem to have hurt Donald Trump's prospects. And even I think there is a contingent of people that actually views this type of lawfare against political opponents as a far greater threat than they view Donald Trump, even if they don't love Donald Trump.
Yeah, there's hand-wringing about our system and our institutions and our democracy, and then there's this. And people say, well, hang on, maybe this is actually part of the problem that you're talking about. And I know that people in a certain vein of thinking just cannot process that, cannot fathom that, and yet it's how quite a lot of people feel, including, as you say, some folks who are not automatically, like intrinsically, going to go to bat for Donald Trump over everything all the time. Molly, I want to ask you about this, and it's been my obsession about the 2024 race now for a few weeks. And then there was another data point that just arrived over the weekend that further fortifies the point. I go back to a Marquette poll a couple weeks ago that showed this. Then there was an AP poll that showed the same thing. There was a Democratic memo that got circulated from one of their top data people saying, we are worried about this. And now the NBC News poll, which overall has Trump leading by 2 points head-to-head against Joe Biden, in the internal numbers of that poll, when you look at the crosstabs, they asked, have you voted in the last two elections, 2020 and 2022? And among those who said, yes, I voted in both, Biden is up by 9 points. Among those who say, no, I didn't vote in either of those two elections, Trump is up by 22 points. Poll after poll is showing that low propensity, unreliable voters, and especially unregistered eligible voters, Trump has massive double-digit leads, like 15 to 30 points I've seen in those groups. Whereas Biden is consistently leading in the definitely going to vote, always vote contingent. I feel like this needs to be the number one focus of the Trump campaign and the Republican Party for the next 6 months. I just wonder, like, are they aware of this dynamic? Are they doing something about it? Because you can't just magically get a bunch of people to vote who don't typically want to or currently can't because they're not registered. Like, you need to do things to get them to vote. And I feel like that might be the difference between winning and losing in November.
Exactly. And I just thank you for noticing this issue, because you see all these people talking about public opinion and the mood of the country. And it is absolutely true that if we were running elections like we ran them in 1980, we'd probably see a 1980 style blowout. That's not how we run elections anymore. We run ballot operations. And so Democrats, love them or hate them, have done a really good job of building up ballot operations, operations whereby they target their demographics and they handle every part of the process of getting the ballot into the ballot box. And Republicans are still kind of like, oh, well, clearly everybody knows the country is not doing well and we just hold an election. And if it's free and fair, then everything will work out great. No, that's not how it works. And you really have to invest seriously in ballot operations. This means
early, because like waiting till the last minute on one day in November, because we don't like mail ballots or whatever, like you can be mad about any of that. And you can make good points about all of that. But if one side is playing with all of these tools, fairly and unfairly, and the other side is saying, we just believe the people will all show up en masse on this one day and will prevail, I just don't think that is a recipe for success.
It's
last
not.
Word to you.
Yeah, no, and I'm one of those people who wishes we all voted on the same day and accepted the results that night, you know, but that's not what we're doing. And so you need to get in there very early. There is no election day. There's an election season, and it has already begun, by which I mean there are states where you have to get on permanent early voting lists so that you can get the ballot handed to you so that they can track the ballot in the way that one party has been doing for quite some time. And so money needs to be invested there, particularly in swing states. If you are a Republican and want the Republican candidate to win, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, like these are really important things to focus on. And having a better candidate or having a better message is not going to cut it. And you're absolutely right. Election day is about a year too late, certainly 6 months too late. And so the time to work on these efforts is, it's right now.
Molly Hemingway, editor-in-chief at The Federalist, best-selling author, Fox News contributor. Her family, blessedly unafflicted by cannibalism, to our knowledge. Molly, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
That was yet another Benson Bite. For full episodes of The Guy Benson Show, go to GuyBensonShow.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.